Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's going on, everybody? Mitch Michaels, Kenny Ducey, Pamela Maldonado, and Zachary Cohn here on Tennis Bets Live. We are into Madrid Masters. We're firmly entrenched on the road to Roland Garros, and we're back to another 1,000 event. This time it's a combined event. Glad you're watching or listening to the show on YouTube, Twitter, tennis.com, Facebook, all your podcast platforms as well. The road to Roland Garros is here. We're going forward. A lot to recap and a lot to discuss this week. So let's go around the horn. Zachary Cohn, Zico, you're here on the show, and no neck brace too, which is good. So glad you can make the show.
Yeah, it's a good time of the year. I'm really enjoying the clay season so far. I've had a good last couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this tournament, you know, plays out. It's really early, so obviously we can still talk about it from a futures perspective. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how Sinner bounces back from, you know, the Monte Carlo loss, you know, where he cramped up. I know that's been an issue in the past, but I do think that he was right in some, you know, saying that the nerves kind of got to him a little bit. But I do look forward to just a tournament with Alcaraz, a tournament with Sinner, and just seeing how it plays out.
Yeah, we got Alcaraz in the clubhouse with the win today. Sinner is the top seed. Pamela Maldonado, bottom right of your screen. And Pam, it's always interesting. We've got these picks. We've got some tennis at altitude. And also keeping tabs on the Roland Garros market. There's some nice little tweaks that have happened as a result of last week. So what's got your mind so far?
I feel like Nadal is just starting to string us along. He's like, well, you know, I'm going to die for this. And then he's like, well, you know, I'm going to see how I feel. I may not play at all. So it's kind of just like a typical Nadal interview. Well, you know, and it's just like, well, we don't know. So aside from that, I mean, the value on players for the Roland Garros futures hasn't changed that much. And they're probably unlikely to change drastically from now until then, even though it is a full month away. But unless something like really surprising happens or comes out of left field, then I think we expect them to stay pretty much the same.
Yeah, he was pretty close to, you know, echoing the quote of that San Jose Sharks goalie where he was like, you know, what's this even matter? We're all going to die soon anyway. So he's starting to be really open about his feelings and his health. Kenny Ducey, welcome again back to the program. Some good clay court tennis as well as we had last week, a couple tournaments. Now we're into just a big combined event. So I don't know if that changes your strategy. Maybe it's a little better to just singularly focus on one event this week.
Well, it's also always nice to have, first of all, it's always nice to be here, but it's nice to have a lot of matches to bet from. I think a lot of times as bettors and as handicappers, we tend to press a little bit as the tournament goes on. When you have quarterfinal day or even the semifinals, it's hard to, you want to find value in a couple lines, and some matches that you may not bet, you know, first week of the tournament, now all of a sudden you're like, well, you know, like this is kind of a bet for me. So I always welcome many more lines to bet, whether it's, you know, five events in 1 week or a combined event like this with a lot of great players in either draw. But you know, look, I mean, anything can happen here. Mariano Navone could creep into the top 10 of Roland Garros odds if he keeps this up. So we'll see.
Yeah, there's a lot to go to in this tournament, especially. Yeah, I should point this out too before we get on. Last week, Zico hitting the futures on the market with both Casper and Tsitsipas to make the final. Casper wins biggest tournament of his career, winning the 500. I know he's gotten to a couple Grand Slam finals, 3 DP. Back, but this was my top player, and as we're gonna,
yeah, we, I don't know if we know what you said because it was now you're in 240p.
Oh no,
you want me to hype up Casper Ruud? I'll do it.
Yeah, I think he does. Yeah, no, I can hear you now, man.
Yeah, look, I think that he's played like the most consistent clay court tennis of anyone over the last year, and I think the numbers back that up. I don't even really need to say it as opinion. And I do think that over the last year, you know, since the start of 2024, I think that we've seen a different Casper in the aggression that he's played with. I think that he's taking shots down the line a little bit more from the backhand side, really letting rip that forehand a little bit more. And I think he's made, you know, incremental improvements as both a server and a returner. So I think that, you know, he has limitations in his game. We always talk about him, but he is trying really hard to get over him. And he's like, he hears the criticism about his lack of, you know, burst and, you know, just like overall explosiveness. And he's doing his best. And like, it is yielding results. Hopefully it ends up with him breaking out and winning a Grand Slam at some point. It will have to be at Roland Garros. But yeah, I do think that we have to give him some credit because he is changing his game.
That was a really clean match that he played against Tsitsipas, who, you know, I know I played a lot of tennis and wasn't at his best form, Kenny, but it was good to see Rude. And it was good to see Rude kind of look like a little different player, because as Zico said, some of his weaknesses in the past, he kind of cleaned up pretty good in that match at least.
You know, I think this is what makes tennis such a great sport. And if you look at the years that Casper Ruud has had, Jannik Sinner, the same thing, right? You're always trying to make improvements as a young player. And I think the weakness for Casper Ruud, obviously, was you're not hitting the serve hard enough. You can't win on hard courts. So he worked painstakingly hard. I mean, too hard last offseason, which ended up leading into a really tough start to 2023. But he worked very hard over the last 3 years, adding a lot of miles an hour on the serve, trying to flatten out his forehand when he can. Obviously, the backhand was always an issue for him. And now has, I mean, I wouldn't call it a weapon, but it's absolutely palatable, passable at this level against top players, you know, and he can still crush winners off of it, you know, if given the space. But that's the beautiful thing about tennis, is that now we're starting to see with Sinner and Ruud the marriage of all of these added skills with the skills that got them into the top 100. And I think, you know, one of the things for me that I didn't like about Casper Ruud that I was struggling with was, and when we talked about on the show, was like the fact that he tailored his game so much to hard court to get better on that surface, because that is a lot of the schedule. He did lose a little bit of that clay finesse. Obviously, he's always going to hit the topspin forehand, but wasn't really bouncing as much. It's hard to really criticize his play on clay because he did, you know, end up making those Roland Garros finals, even though Alexander Bublik, what is this draw? But, you know, I think this is now we're seeing the full version of what he can bring to the table. I think we're seeing a complete Casper Ruud. He is playing with aggression now, and I think mentally, in that aspect, he's taken a big step forward. So I'm seeing a guy that can play elite tennis on clay again, which is great to see. And it hasn't really impacted his ability to play on other surfaces. And I think the tools now that he's added for the hard courts are now shining through on clay. And this is a very interesting tournament to see what he can do, because yes, he's coming off of not like a Masters level long week, right? But still a long week. He had to go to war with some good players there in Barcelona. So this is these are conditions with altitude, which is going to reward his pace a little bit, that he could certainly have a good showing. So I'm interested to see how far he can make it this week. But I think everyone is on upset alert here later in the tournament against Casper Ruud.
And Pam, just going off that and what we've seen, and knowing that there's no Djokovic in Madrid, and Alcaraz, he looked good today, but it was his first match back, and Sinner, you know, all the stuff about him being the top seed in a clay court event. Is this really a land of opportunity? I know we can talk about upsets, but also a player like Casper Ruud, or whether it's Zverev or some of these other players, this is probably their chance to make a move on the lead up to RG.
This 100% is the chance, and Madrid is a perfect tournament for it because any of these players can win. You can make a case for Zverev, for even Medvedev. You can make a case for any player right now going into the hardcourt season, midway through the hardcourt season, headed into Roland Garros. They all have strengths that can be amplified on the surface, but they also have a lot of weaknesses because of injuries, because of time off, because of in and out, just a lot of variables going in with a lot of players. Now, I do want to expand on Casper because we can talk about his forehand, his backhand, the improvements that he's made to the physical skill set. But like a huge improvement that he's made to his physical body is he's become a lot more flexible in the last few months. And I just read an interview, what was it, not even a month ago, where he said, I have specifically worked in the last 6 months to work on my flexibility and my mobility. You need that when you are going up against the cross-court hitters, corner to corner, you know, kissing the baseline, kissing each line, painting the lines. Carlos Alcaraz, Jannik Sinner, these are all players that are going to make you run around the court. So if you're lacking that Novak Djokovic type of flexibility and mobility, you're going to fall behind way beyond than just, oh, I can hit a good backhand. So because he's specifically like honed in on that part of his game, he has a lot better movement for it, already has the all-around court game. So it's just now starting to gel together.
Yeah, it really is. I think there's a real chance that Rude, and we're going to get to the odds of what RG looks like, but draw is going to be huge, as we know, and he takes advantage of it, as Kenny knows. So there's going to be a chance there. I want to get to some plays though that are already in the books.
Sleep on FAA. I was gonna mention it later in the show, but we can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
We will. But I want to get
that's a sneaky match there. It could be a sneaky Felix week.
I want to get to the picks, the good, the bad, the ugly. Some matches still in progress. Kenny, you know, we'll get one of the bad ones out of the way just because we were talking about it before. But you shot your shot with Van Ash against Baez. He was in this match. The value was there at plus 185. Just couldn't quite get over the finish line. So a little frustrating, but I saw where the logic was, and this was a very winnable match.
Yeah, you know, Baez coming in on four straight losses. Van Asha, you know, I think one of my strategies in betting tennis is, and I've said it many times on this show, you can look at the best tennis player in the world right now, Jannik Sinner. When he was 18, 19 years old, he would go to challengers. He'd lose some of these matches to guys that he had no business losing to, or, you know, letting guys hang around. That's the thing with young players who, if you project them to be a top 20 player, which I do with Luka Van Asha, he's an amazing athlete, incredible defensive skills. More times than not, they're going to win in these main draws in the big matches. And it's maddening to see the inconsistency early in the career, but it's just part of what comes with betting on a young player. And speaking of betting on tennis, like this is an example. The game spread was ended up covered by Baez here. He won four more games, so he covered the game spread. The set spread wasn't really. It's a tough one, and I think ultimately I'm happy with taking Van Asha. This is now three matches in 3 days that I've ended up losing, like right at the death. Dominic Kupfer yesterday from 5-1 up in the final set breaker to RCB to losing 7-5, and then Kova going three sets, two underdogs that I thought, you know, were presented a lot of great value. Kova at plus 165, Kupfer yesterday was, I think, plus 140, if I'm not mistaken. And then Luka today at plus 185, nearly got back into that match late in the third. So you live with it. I think they were plus Eve, and obviously I hit a big underdog as well, which I'm sure you won't mention. Luka's going to have his week. I don't know if when it's going to come, but he's an all surface player. He had a nice win at the Australian Open over Musetti. He can play. And I think he's going to win some matches this year. And that first tournament that he makes a run at, is probably going to come out of nowhere. Maybe it's just Lyon, like Archer Feast last year.
Hey, I mentioned what you send me, and I got the Shapovalov pick here, which was good. A very good pick by you, by the way. I don't know if you were just fading Etch. I know you love it. Counts as two wins, right? When you beat Etcheverry.
No, it doesn't. I've won on Etcheverry. We've gone over this. I'm a born again sketcher. I think that this is just a good situation for Shapovalov. I think we've talked about how he likes the time on clay. You marry that with the altitude here, that is going to, you know, make his serve play up a little bit more. And I was really, really impressed with him. I mean, look, I've been impressed with him all season. I think he's tried to play a little bit more conservative. I think it's helped him a lot. He's gone for the shots when he needs to. And this is now a run that he's on where, you know, it's, I think that last win was really a shining example of where he's grown, because, you know, the losses this year have been really, really tough to swallow for him. When you look at, you know, the third set against Bublik on a hard court, Musetti, where he was up a break at Indian Wells in a kind of similar situation with not altitude, but a little bit of a slow hard court, the Dardari match as well. Like, he's been in a lot of these matches that he's ended up losing, and then the Dardari match he comes through, and then this one as well. Like, it looked like he was tired against Diaz Acosta. He manages to win that match. So I just thought he looked really good in that match. I mean, Diaz Acosta is just as good as a defender as really anyone on tour right now. He's an incredible player. So to win that match gave me a lot of confidence to bet him against Etch, who still kind of struggling for form after that injury at Golden Swing. So yeah, I figured, he's probably the more talented player. He's not going to get into a lot of long rallies against Etcheverry, which he likes. So I figured fire him up, and he won. So nice performance. And I think, you know, this is another guy that just playing for ranking points right now, just like his fellow countryman, Felix Auger-Aliassime. The hunger's there. And I think he's starting to make some progress in the mental department, getting over some of these hurdles that have stopped him from really winning a lot of matches early in the season. So I think that the stock is rising for Shapovalov right now, and I'm going to continue to bet him as long as the odds makers continue to distract him.
Well, I think he's obviously done it before, especially we've seen on the clay court swing leading up to Roland Garros. So if you're looking for him to find value in a player that's done it, you could go a lot worse than Shapovalov.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Pam, I know you have a couple picks, one today, one tomorrow. The late match today, we're going over on Chory Zverev, 22 games. This line's been shifting a little bit, but you're playing 22 over. Logic here, what's your thought process for this pick?
Anytime I think a match could go to a tiebreak, then I'm automatically looking to the over on the games. So Borna Coric, Alexander Zverev, over 22. And this is really just under the belief that Borna, he has so many player qualities that can annoy an opponent. Great from the baseline. He lives in long rallies. He has a strong backhand, and he has really good footwork. And because of that, he knows, and he has experience, and he has the mental mindset to really wear your opponent down. He's had success against big servers like Hubert Hurkacz, and I like Alex Zverev to run deep in this tournament, but I don't think it's going to be at like an easy breezy run of things. I think George can definitely be competitive. If there is a tiebreak, then I like this to at least even end at like 23 games.
Hmm. The only player to beat Alexander Zverev here in Madrid the last 2 years, Carlos Alcaraz. Other than that, it's been his tournament. So like Pam said, I think he's going to make a deep run here. This is I always am scared about betting against Zverev in Madrid.
That was
this
a weird.
Isn't exactly betting against Zverev though. It's just if I like it, like this could be like a 13-10 match.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, and that I'm trying to think too, because that match against Alcaraz at Madrid was probably the worst match of Zverev's career. So I mean, that was quite
well,
an outlier.
You know what though? You look at the bright side, Mitch, and it allowed us to bet Zverev as a huge underdog the next few times he played Carlos, and that was also a very strange match because it looked like both matches, really. I mean, the 2022 final, it looked like he lost the match before it even started. He came out of the locker room just kind of flat. You know, I don't know if it was fatigue against Tsitsipas in the semis, but both times he was just like, you know, this kid's going to beat me. What am I going to do? How am I going to beat this kid? Which I think is a feeling that a lot of people share, including Tsitsipas against Alcaraz. But it was very weird, both of them.
We got Zico, you know, I don't want to get to your record, but it's you're sizzling right now. So what's the best thing to do when you're sizzling is play money line on Munar. So we're going Munar against Struff.
And he's down a break.
Struff had his week last week. You're done with him. But why are we going Munar in this one?
I mean, that has a lot to do with it. I think that this is a letdown spot for Struff. I know, but did Kenny just say he's done? I didn't even know the match started. But yeah, I just think that Struff, I just don't think he's that good of a clay court player. I mean, I know that he's had some success on it in his career. I know he won last week, but that was a really weird tournament. He was playing it at home. It was freezing cold. He had the power to hit through the conditions. I'm not sure he'll, you know, back it up this week. I think that Munar, you know, playing his home tournament now, a really strong clay court player. I just think it was worth a shot on a match that I do think is a little bit closer to 50-50 than the odds makers set it at. So it was really just kind of a number grab. I think that they play this match 10 times. Like it goes both ways, probably 5.
You sure this is Munar's home tournament? Because Struff did win, what, 7 matches here last year, including qualies?
Well,
the final?
Munar is a Spaniard.
But yeah, and he's also an adult academy guy. So, like, I don't know.
He has a lot of crowd support everywhere now.
But the letdown is the best logic for this one because Struff's been playing tennis for 15 years on the pro level. He wins his first tour tournament. He probably had a little fun last week, I would imagine.
I want to take this moment to ask a question to everybody, or just a thought that I have. I actually think it is the Spaniards here in Madrid, Barcelona. I mean, except for the special guys, obviously, Carlos and Rafa, it does feel like they play with a lot more pressure on them. And there's been a lot of opportunities to fade the Spanish in these tournaments because I don't know, just, I mean, RBA almost losing to like John Isner 2 years ago and 3 years ago. I just feel like they play with a lot of tension, and it actually doesn't create like a friendly situation to bet on a home guy. I don't know what you guys think, but to me, that's what I've noticed over the last 2 years.
This is always the outlier of the tournament too. I mean, you mentioned Isner. Hubie might do well here too. The big servers, and this is where your time to shine is, especially on those odder courts. I think Isner did say that court 2 or 3 at Madrid is his favorite court to serve on. So I think it just kind of shows you that some big hitters can really like shoot flat.
But also, yeah. Munar's won 3 matches here in his career. They all came last year over, you know, Kokkinakis, Arnaldi, and then Griekspoor in a walkover. And then RCB went, I mean, even though he did beat my boy Kupfer yesterday, which was heartbreaking, that was only his second win ever in Madrid. Like, I just think the, I don't know, the record kind of shows it. But I'm curious what everyone else thinks.
No, I mean, I feel like it depends on the player. I mean, I think you see it at the U.S. Open, too. Like, I think Americans struggle at the U.S. Open. Like, it is hard to play in front of your own home fans. But I do think this match was, it is more about just, I think that Munar is a good clay court player. I think he's a good returner of serve. And I do think that he'll be able to get to Struve's serve in this match. But, I, you know, it's a little added bonus that if he needs the crowd support, he'll have it. If he needs a little extra adrenaline.
Okay. We're going to use on this one. All right. Well, look, there's a lot of different ways to play certain bets. Another one I wanted to get to, Zico. Well, we can talk a little bit about the futures because I know, you know, Pam mentions Zverev in terms of just who can make a run here. You know, Alcaraz is the top seed. You're liking kind of chalk. Well, really is chalk. You're going Sinner and Swiatek, and you got some sprinkles on some other ones too. But Zico going with the chalk at the top. Just trusting the best tennis players.
Yeah, I just thought that Sinner really should have won in Monte Carlo, and I think you moved to Madrid where the power is rewarded a little bit more, and I just like his chances. I have 2 units on Sinner at plus 300, so it would be a big payout if I do win. And I did sprinkle Casper Ruud and Alexander Zverev just in case, you know, we do get some wackiness and one of those guys does end up winning. But I do think that this is a good tournament to kind of go away from Alcaraz. I think that, you know, you saw him talking after he won his match just now. He said he had no idea how it was going to go. He didn't know how his forearm was going to feel. He's wearing the big elbow sleeve. So I do think that this is a tournament where, you know, the other guys can win. I do think that just overall, Sinner's baseline level this year has just been way higher than everyone else's. So I think you're still seeing some really good prices on him. We just talked about the French Open before briefly, but I think at plus 350, I feel similarly. I just think he should be priced at plus 200 if the other guys are as well. So I think that these are good opportunities still to bet on Sinner before he kind of has the breakthrough on clay. I think if he won Monte Carlo, you would have seen a different number here. So you got a little bit lucky there. And I think with Iga, I just kind of trust her to bounce back off of like losses to like a Rybakina. I think that we've seen it in the past where she loses to Coco in a tournament and then she comes out and really blasts her off the course the next time. I just think that I trust Iga to bounce back, and I think she's never won this tournament before, so there will be some motivation.
Sabalenka beat Linette in 3 sets, and I bring that up. First round, had lost last week, but her history in this tournament is a lot of first round losses and a lot of titles. So there's something about just getting through that first match that might bode well. But no, I mean, Pam, I don't know if you mentioned Zverev on some of your content as well, but you know, he's dropped down to 1300. There's just so much uncertainty here. The Carlos side is real because he's kind of doing the smart thing, being very careful with his health with a major around the corner.
I think right now I'm going with Zverev, one, because of the number was just too good for somebody who has 2 titles here. I think out of every player that can win, Zverev probably has like the easier draw out of the bunch. So because of that, that's automatically like, all right, I'm going to pick him to win. Now, is he actually going to come to fruition? We don't know this. Like he is still going to end up having to face Carlos in the semifinal if Carlos makes it that deep and does well. But Garritos is a question mark because of his injury. And I think just even though he looked really good in his opening round, Garritos, I mean, it was against a much lesser opponent. So it's kind of like an Nadal situation. You should be blasting through your first round opponents. Let's see what happens in your third, your fourth and quarterfinals and so on. I was also contemplating Sinner, but I'm just not as convinced that I know that I said center for Roland Garros, but that's because it's also like a best of five. And I think he has just like a lot more weapons and variety. But when, right now in the best of three on this court speed, coming off that mental slip, I'm just going to go into Zverev just because of the dollar value alone.
Kenny, is there anybody longer, you know, long shot, longer than Rude 1500 that you would be worthy of maybe a sprinkle in the future?
No, I mean, I know you're looking for someone ridiculous because that's always what you get out of me. I will say about Zverev, we've talked about how, you know, I think we all love him for Roland Garros. I've beaten a dead horse with that number. And I also did just say, 10 minutes ago that this is his tournament, right? The only guy that's beaten him the last 2 years here is Carlos. Last year, even more of a weird outlier because he was coming off of the injury. I will say, Shapovalov, next round is not going to be easy. He's 5-3 against Shapovalov, but three wins. He's 0-2 against Tommy Paul if he does get to that stage. And then Taylor Fritz also lurks. Taylor Fritz was amazing at this tournament. I don't think he played better tennis all year than what he showed in Madrid. And then, of course, you know, he ran into Zhang, who played even better. Like, Zhang was playing out of his skull last year in Madrid, which was also a very strange tournament because we had Karatsev and Struff making those deep runs. So I'm a little hesitant to play it. I think Casper actually does have the better draw here. And we did talk about the fact that this should be a court that suits him. I am a little worried about the fatigue factor. You know, Zico brought it up with Struff. You could bring it up with Ruud as well, given the win in Barcelona. And then he's also going to, you know, run into, I mean, look, he's beaten Felix. He's handled Felix the last few times they've played here in Madrid as well. But that's a player playing with reckless abandon right now with nothing to lose. He just needs ranking points right now. And I think he's been improved so far this year, despite the record not really showing it. So that could be a tough match. I mean, I just think a lot of things could happen in this draw. I'm not going to go out and say like Cam Norrie is going to win this tournament. I think the top guys probably still have the best chance. And Sinner, to me, marrying that a little extra pop with the serve and forehand on altitude clay, I think that's probably the guy who ultimately wins. Don't hate like the Zverev and Ruud sprinkles. I just don't know if I necessarily see it. And Sinner should be able to make it here to the final without much hesitation. So I that's ultimately where I probably land. But you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think this is like a very attractive board for taking long shots, despite the fact that we had a strange Madrid tournament last year. I think it kind of levels out here and we get a little more predictable draw. But I do feel like a lot of these top names could go out. Also, like, I don't know, what about Francis Tiafoe? Like, just the guy that we've not talked about at all this year because he's been bad. But, you know, this theoretically are good conditions for him. He's played a lot of clay over the last 3 years, trying to get better on the surface. Another guy with sort of nothing to lose at this point. He's just had a terrible season. He's going to come out swinging and he's got a pretty easy draw in front of him. So I mean, why not? Why not Francis?
I also feel a little bit better about Zverev at the French Open than I do here. I just think that he, you know, the forehand is just a weakness in my opinion. So I think that playing on a fast court is going to allow people to attack that a little bit more. I know he's won here twice, but the forehand has gotten worse and worse over the last couple of years. And I think that he needs the slow courts at Roland Garros to kind of set up and like push it over the net.
Yeah. Someone did ask us about Hurkacz, Mitch. Maybe we could talk about him.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a little bit because we got to move along
all right,
here.
You can wait, Foxfy. Mitch doesn't care.
We got to touch on the updates on the RG market because it is fascinating. I'm not just saying that. Here we go now on Tennis Bets Live with our panel of experts going into RG, talking Madrid Masters and more. The movement's interesting, and some of you guys have plucked some really good value bringing that up on the men's side, like the check-in weekly, how results can change things. Sinner's are all the way up to plus 300. Alcaraz comes down a little bit. Nadal stays at 800. Casper Ruud, the biggest jump of the week, going up to plus 1,100. And so it follows out from there. A lot of the back end stayed the same a week ago. But Pam, there's the movement there. Ruud jumping up, still 11-1. Sinner coming down. Alcaraz and Djokovic coming down a smidge. But we're seeing the markets really settle out here and kind of hold firm.
I'm going to hold firm on it all. I'm keeping receipts. getting ready for when everyone goes into it and completely doubts him. Mwah, he's 37. Mwah, his injuries. Mwah, he hasn't won. You can cite every excuse in the book when it comes to Nadal. And the truth is, nobody freaking knows from now until day one, until week one, until week two. And we won't know probably until that second week entering in. Okay, he is playing ball to the wall. Why? Because this is what the expectation was. Is he going to retire there? Who knows now? Is he going to retire after? Who knows now? They're going to the Olympics, playing doubles with Akras, going to the to the Ryder Cup. I mean, there's like a bunch of, there's like a lot of the Labor Cup. There's a lot of things coming into this of, I'm just not going to underestimate him. And you're going to be giving me almost 10 to 1 on the king of freaking clay at his home court. Sold.
Is the number one receipt going to be on Rafa himself? For what he said recently, not just like backing down.
Well, I just may not play. I don't know. Yeah. Come on, Rafa.
I think especially like we were saying, the Laver Cup's become the place where all the greats retire now. It's like a nice fitting tribute to a career that ends at the Laver Cup. That was a pretty interesting movement there. On the women's side, Zico, you had Rybakina, the win, no surprise there. 14-1 last week, now down to 10-1 and steadily going. There's a lot that can happen this week in Madrid as well. Unless Sabalenka goes deep into the tournament, Coco Gauff or Rybakina can get to number two, but in the rankings. But Zico, any thoughts on the updated? Now we do have Iga at minus money as well, I should point out.
I still like Rybakina if you're getting her at double digits. So I think that even at 10-1, it's a solid price, but I would still play Iga. And I think that the last time we did this, she was plus 100. So even losing that tournament, you know, didn't change anything. I think that we just, I don't know. It's just really hard. This is the one tournament of the year where I'm like, you either take Iga or you don't take anything. And I don't really have any long shots because it's her tournament. I don't know. Like, this is Rafa on clay. This is Iga on clay.
Yeah. Yeah, Kenny, Rybakina 10-1 seems like the play. We'll see if Gauff can go on, improve her odds and, you know, get that number two seed, which would be big as well. You know, that's actually the point I should be making here is that if you get that number two ranking, you're away from Iga. It's huge.
Yeah, that was something I was thinking about on the men's side as well with Casper Ruud's ranking kind of coming up that he could maybe get some draw luck. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about Iga, you know, at length the last couple of shows. I think that when you look at the way that this season has unfolded, especially on clay, it feels kind of hard to believe that she would lose at Roland Garros, the tournament that really was hers before she even won it. That was always going to be a Rafa-like run. I mean, obviously, no one's ever going to equate quite the record that Rafa's compiled here at Roland Garros, but that theoretically was going to be what she won the most. So, yeah, I think this is going to definitely be an interesting battle for that number two spot in the draw. I think Rybakina, as we've talked about, has just a great chance of winning because she hasn't won a ton yet this year. Like, she's going to win tournaments. It's just a matter of when. They kind of come randomly, so... You know, obviously Wimbledon is going to be the time we really talk about her a lot, but I don't think I'm going to sleep on her this clay season. Absolutely not. And I think at Madrid, she's a weapon at altitude. And I think with that, maybe we see her odds change a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, we could also talk about Mira Andreeva like I did last time, the all teenage matchup today with Noskova. She ended up winning that in three sets. I just think if it's not going to be Iga, it's, you know, like, staying true to what we've seen in years past on the women's side, especially at Roland Garros, like, it's not going to be Iga. It could just really be anybody at this point.
Yeah. Something to consider going forward. We have a couple more picks to get to back in Madrid. And Pam, your other pick made me think, because the guys were talking about players that could be weapons here. Another big serving American coming into town. You like Ben Shelton over Mahach. Now, I know... You know, Mahach is famous for his game and his short shorts, so we just ignored that for this pick. We're going Ben Shelton on Madrid, minus 130.
I think you have kind of like the misconception of like, oh, Shelton, maybe he's not a player that's suited for clay. And I'm starting to believe that maybe he actually is, because you need to have a lot of great movement. He has a big serve, which he has that. He has a big forehand, and he plays highly aggressive. He has that all-around court game facing an opponent in Mahach that plays really more of a baseline game. So if you're giving me what I consider a short price at minus 130 to just win with a more variety to player, I'm going to go with Shelton every time. And I think he's finding rhythm, confidence on this surface. So I would even be considering him for maybe a deep quarterfinal run in Roland Garros. I'm super interested in his draw.
Well, you want to mention the receipt word with the people who are the recipient of the receipts, I guess. Ben Shelton did actually say, just like we talked about with Nadal, saying that he wasn't sure. Ben Shelton said, like, last year, he was like, I think clay could be a good surface for me. And then, of course, he went out to Estoril and played some clay tournaments. And the only thing that he showed that he had to show for it was, like, that ridiculous trick shot that he hit. He didn't win anything, so or at least not back-to-back matches. But I do feel like, as Pam said, he does have a game that could be suited for clay. I think he can add shape to his forehand. And this is definitely a spot that I like him in as well. Like, I think Mahach is the hot guy on the block. I think the line says Mahach, but I just think Shelton wins. Like, I just think he's probably the better tennis player. And Mahach at this point has just garnered so much respect for the run he's had. Long ago were the days that he was a huge underdog to Francis Tiafoe at the Australian Open before he beat him 3-0. And I think this is now maybe the time to sell high on Mahach with the guy that is has said that he can play on clay. That's probably better than, as Pam said, a lot of people would expect on this surface.
I like it. I like the logic there. We'll see if Shelton can, again, that run last year, the clay season last year, just starting out on tour.
Exactly. It's kind of the same thing with Carlos Alcaraz. Like, oh, he's not going to be good on grass. And then he comes out like, you're not good until you are. You got to have a couple of years, some time to acclimate. And I think at least for this year, I'm seeing changes in his game that can allow him to acclimate a little faster.
Yeah, fast learner.
And then also, though, some people like Tsitsipas and Ruud will just never be good on grass.
Well, yeah, they just don't want to. Would you rather be good on grass if you're good on clay, or would you rather go see The Weeknd every
I mean, that's why Nick Kyrgios is always complaining, because there's not enough grass court tournaments. And to be fair, I mean, if it is going to be the third surface, you know, you can't let guys get away with not playing it, right?
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous that they play like 3 weeks of grass and then it's done.
And I don't think the grass court, I don't think the new Masters event in Saudi Arabia in January is going to be on grass. I want to call my shot on that one. So. But we used to have U.S. Opens and Australian Opens on grass. So, I mean, just
bring back carpet.
Carpet would be fun. Carpet would be fun. Let's just do it.
I also enjoyed how the tour tweeted out the highlights of the blue clay in Madrid, which was like an unmitigated disaster for the players, and Federer won, but the whole time he complained about it. And then he like commented like, great memories. Like, no, it wasn't, dude. You didn't have great memories. You hated it. You hated the blue clay.
Better visual, but yeah, unmitigated.
Now I know that I'm getting old when I'm watching clay and I'm like, where's the ball?
Yeah.
But I am watching on my laptop, so I'm like zooming in.
I will say also, this is a hot take, but I don't support Hawkeye on clay for the very lone reason that I really love watching the chair umpires run out in little tiny steps to see the mark. I think that's something in tennis that we don't have arguments anymore with Hawkeye Live on hard courts, because, you know, it is what it is. I like to see a little dispute between the player and the umpire.
It's messed up though when they make them get out of the chair when they like know it's out. You're like thinking like a middle-aged person, like,
it's funny. Tennis is funny. It's a funny sport, and you can't lose the humor in the debates between what's touching the line and where the mark is, and people scrubbing out the mark before the umpire.
Because you see the player always go, and then the ump go.
Oh yeah, it's great. We do have one more match pick to get to on this show, Zico, and I'm trying to figure out exactly when this is going to go final in the first set. We've got an interesting one that you might be able to clinch now or maybe not, but you took Navon plus 1.5 sets versus Rune minus 134. You also sprinkled on the money line, but we're at, what, 5-all in the first set? Holger's
back. 5-all juice.
Yeah,
the most crucial point in tennis right here.
So Holger, we're just going on an anti. We're just going full baggy shorts today with these picks, but Navon, why were you going with a lesser known, clearly, player in this one to just cover the set spread?
I think just kind of trusting in what I saw in the Golden Swing, where Navon was like one of the breakout players of the whole thing. I thought he played some really good tennis. I think he's 12-5 on the clay this year. Has the highest break percentage in all of tennis right now, which is mostly because he has only played clay court events this year. But I did think that he was going to get to the Rune serve, because I think that Holger has kind of been inconsistent with the ball in his racket this year, and inconsistent in general. Like, his performance against Struff last week was embarrassing. And I know after the match, like, his mom said that he was sick, but it's always something. And I just think that he's been really inconsistent. And like, this is just a really tough opponent to get early in the tournament.
No one ever loses Zico. It's always an injury.
I'm just glad the thing I learned from that is Zico, big golden swing guy.
I do love the golden swings.
I like that.
It does something to you, doesn't it? It does. The Cordova.
That's why open. I like João Fonseca.
You know what I'm upset about? I'm upset that the Cordova Open changed. They used to have a very unique score bug, and now I feel like they don't have it anymore. What happened to that? That was like visual crack. It was just like seeing it was just like, oh, golden swing is here.
But that's a point there, Zico. Fonseca looks really good. That's a 17-year-old, and he's, you know, he is a full-figured adult right now.
There's some center to him, just like in the lankiness and like the ability to hit with power from both sides. And I like him kind of against Cam Norrie in the next round. I haven't decided if I'm going to take it or not, but he's like plus 180.
He got his first Masters 1000 win, but he's also beaten. I think he's got three, and he just turned pro. I think he's got three top 100 victories. And if you do the numbers, that's pretty rare just starting out to not that many wins against the top 100 when you just start your pro career. So, yeah. He's one to watch, and maybe, as Kenny said, the on athletic, or as you said, maybe the on athletes got a little rivalry.
They got to step up their game, and maybe just send us some free merch. But come on, we're done with the pink. The pink's out. We saw the pink. We saw the white. We saw the black. Let's get some new kits in here. Let's get some new athletes. There's like three.
Yeah, but all three are good though. They like struck gold on all of them. They have Iga, they have Shelton, and they have Fonseca. He's going to be a star.
I feel like Federer is just in the room, like, now this guy sucks. Like, get him out of here. It's very, very tough interviews. Kenny, before we go, we won't let our fans off the hook here. Hubie to go on a run here. Your thoughts on, you know, that comment? I think it was a question. Can Hubie, who won his first match, do well here?
I mean, look, he's done okay here in the past. He made the quarters a couple of years ago. He did end up losing to Chorich last year, which was kind of stunning. I mean, the thing with Hubie is it's hard to tell. Like he's a hard guy to bet on in the futures market because he just, I mean, except for, you know, maybe 500 indoor events or, you know, quarter bets really the non-hard court slams, like for some reason he's been a terrible Grand Slam player except for the Wimbledons. He's just a hard guy to bet in the futures market because he just never wins. So that's what I would say. I would say I don't trust him because he's just not been a guy that returns you a lot of money in the futures market. And he did have a nice win over Jack Draper. You know, I think maybe he proved, you know, you talk about guys who just only lose because of injury. Like, you know, they were whispers that maybe he wasn't feeling great at the U.S. Open when he did end up losing in three sets to Draper. But I mean, anybody could beat him. I think the Feast match next could be, lost today, right? Yeah. So the Altmaier match actually probably even more dangerous because he's going to overlook Altmaier and altitude clay. We've seen Altmaier perform very well. We've seen him beat Jannik Sinner or almost beat Jannik Sinner many times. I don't know. I mean, even the Fritz matchup, if he gets that far, if both of them get that far, like I think Fritz probably wins that match. So I'm out on Hubie futures.
And that's the dogs reacting to the break in the match. Zamboni will serve for the first set. So I'm glad.
Take Hurkacz overs. Yeah, I'm in the same sentiment. You can't bet on Hurkacz for the futures market, but you can bet on tie breaks and overs.
Yeah, and he's just gearing up for grass season. He's another one that's just roaring to go over in tie breaks there.
But then didn't he have that? He did have like that random Roland Garros quarters, right? Like he just doesn't make any sense. He's a maddening tennis player from a better's perspective.
Well, last topic today, this has been a fun show. Madrid Masters, looking ahead to Archie. Pam, I'm just going to throw it up there. Tomorrow's match, this is what we're looking at right now. Round two, minus 176. And Nadal getting plus odds, obviously, is weird on clay, but rematch of a week ago. We'll go around the panel, but Pam, start us off here.
So a week ago when Nadal was only a minus 120 favorite, I was like, don't take the bait, guys. But now he's an underdog, and I'm like, do I want to bet Nadal? I think I'm trying to really like figure out if I'm Nadal, what am I trying to do? And he is slowly trying to like pick it up each tournament, each match that he plays. He's just increasing the level of competitiveness so that way he can truly be ready and prepped for Roland Garros. So backing Nadal here intrigues me, but I also said a week ago that Nadal, you cannot bet on him and you cannot bet against him because he's going to do what his team and company have decided what is best.
Kenny, is there any I mean, it could be a prop or any just way to look. If you were going to bet this, and I'll ask the generic question there, forget on if it's just a player, but is there any way to that you would attack this?
Well, thank you for asking, because I do think that the over is a very good play here. I took the over and ADM in their last meeting last week. I think there was what, like a 2 cent profit there with ADM as an underdog. But, you know, look, I think Nadal probably looks a little bit better in this match. I do not think he's going to win, but at a tournament, he's had so much success, a little bit different of an environment for Demonor, both with the crowd, but also just with the conditions as well. I think Nadal probably steals the set here, but I will also say, like, I actually think playing Darwin Blanche in the first round probably hurts him, because that's not an ATP player, not even close. And there was that whole discussion online about whether or not he really should have gotten the wild card to play in that match, having not even won a challenger level match. So you're definitely not reading into that one. And then if you read into the Demonor match, I mean, I just don't think Nadal looked very good at all, but maybe a little home cooking here at another Spanish tournament. I think my gut says he steals a set here. And the only thing you can go off with Nadal right now is gut. Like, how do you feel like he's going to play? How do you feel like he's feeling right now? I think he'll get a little bit better in this match. I do not think he's going to win, but I think the over, if you want to play this match, is what I would say. And I know the over, no disrespect to any three of you, I always feel like the over is a cowardly play, because I like to just pick a side, but I can't. I think Nadal probably wins the set. I think Demonor probably wins. Maybe Demonor 2-1.
Sometimes
I think that's right.
Coward. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, I'd probably land on Nadal winning a set. Like, if you do want to back Nadal, I'd probably go Nadal +1.5 sets. I think that there's a good chance, though, Demon probably covers the game spread, because I think the longer it goes, the more likely Nadal will be to kind of, you know, physically.
But then what? You're laying like -160 with the guy that just got destroyed by Demonor last week? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's why I like Demon with the game spread, to be honest. I just think there's a good chance.
I might commit Frizzell to Nadal +150. Like, if
the level change was a big point there, Kenny. I agree with Blanche to Demon Hour. That's pretty drastic. So that's something to consider as well.
And I love Ulysses. I love Darwin Blanche and Ulysses Blanche. I love my Blanches, but you know, it was
pretty early in the
nice to see him get the wild card, but like, I don't know, man. They could have given it to give it to Quinn Van de Castile. He's playing for Oregon right now. This kid should be he's White Alcaraz. Come on.
All right. Well, hey, look, Zico, props on winning the Navone set bet already.
I didn't know I won until you just said it. So that's awesome.
Well, you did. So I'll say that you might win the money line, and condolences early for the Struff match, because it doesn't look
it's going well.
But he's bashing it. So props there and condolences there. Well, gang, this was fun. We're always having fun here. We're going to do at least one show next week, possibly two. We'll take a look at the schedule. But still got a lot of tennis on the road to Roland Garros. Madrid's going to heat up next week. Then it's Rome. Then it's RG. So exciting, exciting times. For our entire group of panelists, for Pamela Maldonado, Kenny Ducey, and Zachary Cohn, I'm Mitch Michaels. Thanks for watching or listening to Tennis Bets. And have fun out there. This is your favorite gambling show for a reason. Wishing you well on the road to Roland Garros.